Blog Talk Radio.
Good day, everybody. Shalom. This is Rabbi Richard Address, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you again to today's installment of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio and our ongoing series of podcasts. These shows, as we've mentioned before, represent a desire to explore a variety of issues and events that help shape and comment on the current revolution in longevity and how that revolution is impacting our families, ourselves, and our Jewish world at large. And we invite you to share your comments, questions, and ideas with us. You can email us at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. Or you can go to the Jewish Sacred Aging Radio Facebook page and check in there. And hopefully everything is safe and secure. Today we are going to be joined by a couple of people who are probably known to some of you. Dr. Rick Moody, enjoying life in Boulder, Colorado, and a good friend and colleague, Rabbi Dale Friedman, here in the greater Philadelphia area. Dale from growingolder.com, and who's spending her rabbinate now working a lot in counseling and dealing with support for families and individuals dealing with Alzheimer's. And Dr. Rick Moody, who comes to us from a distinguished career in aging from New York and the Brookdale Center and Longevity Center, AARP, and now is applying his trade in the beautiful mountains of Boulder, Colorado. So we're just waiting, and Rick, I think, is on the line. Rick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, how are you? How are you doing?
Happy to be with you, Richard.
Okay, we had a little... those mountains get in the way of the transmission sometimes. You never know. Or else it's a plot by the deep state, wherever that is.
There you go.
Since it happened... The deep state is very popular these days. Rick, we're waiting for Dale. Dale's going to be calling in a couple seconds. First of all, welcome, and thank you very much for your time today on today's show. We want to talk a little bit about your involvement and this Positive Aging Conference, this conference which is coming to the Philadelphia area next week. And so walk me through, first of all, what is it? What's the genesis of this? It's been involved for a few years, if I'm not mistaken. What's the Positive Aging Conference about?
That's right. This is the ninth National Positive Aging Conference. And basically what we're trying to do, and what we've done for the last 9 or 10 years, is to open up a different view about what it means to grow older, a more positive perspective. Lots of different dimensions to that, but it's different from what we get in the mass media or many of the messages that we grew up with.
So this is a couple of days. Walk me through the program, keynotes, workshops, breakouts. You're speaking. What's going on there?
Yeah. We're going to have some local people from Philadelphia. Ken and Mary Gergen, who have long been affiliated with Swarthmore College. And they publish the Positive Aging newsletter and have written a book on this subject. So I've known Ken and Mary for many years, and they're going to be opening things up on Tuesday morning, exactly a week from today, about this time. And then we're going to have lots of breakout groups that deal with things like music and dance, the role of dreams, leaving a legacy, retirement planning, finding an encore career. That's one of my favorites. Lots of others. So if any of our listeners are interested in that, they can easily contact us, and not too late to sign up for the conference.
So why positive aging? I know in the field, people struggle with vocabulary all the time. I mean, you must have run across this because you do so much work nationally, internationally, writing, speaking. There's a real challenge
sure.
at boomers' age as to what to call ourselves, isn't it?
Right. It is a question, and that's why I just use the word positive to indicate that it's the opposite of negative.
Right.
You get the negative all the time, but everybody is going to have their own approach to what it means to be positive. For some people, it means to work, to continue working. And there are people who take that view. They want to work till they drop, so to speak. For others, it's going to be opening up to something new and different that they never did before. Could be the arts, could be the outdoors, could be maybe even more time with their family, their grandchildren. For others, it might take a spiritual or an inner direction. So there's no one path for everybody. But I guess the general approach that I try to recommend is look for what is positive. Don't just focus on the negative, the aches and pains, the losses, and so forth.
Where you are, and now that you've had such a distinguished career, what, you know, personally, what are you looking
at? Well, I try to practice what I preach. I've been retired from my position at AARP, a position I love, by the way, wonderful. I was the vice president for academic affairs, so I got to travel all around this country and see all the great people doing wonderful things in education and aging. But I was happy to retire, and since I've retired, I've been trying to do new things that I never did before. For example, last year I took a week-long intensive program in MIME, learning how to talk with the body without words at all. We're on radio right now, but one could imagine a way of speaking with the body. The body speaks, and I learned a great deal from that. I've done whitewater rafting and ballroom dancing and many other things that I never did before, including weekly voice lessons. Never did that either. So for me, retirement is a time to open up and do new things. At the same time, I also feel a responsibility to try to help others. So I use my skills in fundraising to help small nonprofits with fundraising and marketing. I don't throw money in. Personally, very privileged to have enough money to live comfortably in retirement, so I have the time to help others. And I think that I think there's a Talmudic saying: if I'm not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, what am I? If not now, when?
And when?
When is now? So I think people should be for themselves in the sense of trying to find out what drives them, what makes them tick, what they love, their passion, their purpose. But at the same time, that's not the only thing. And we all do have a responsibility for, since I'm talking to a distinguished rabbi, I'll use that great phrase, tikkun olam, to heal the world, to make things better for the people who are coming after us. So I think we all try to find our balance there for what we do for ourselves and what we do for others.
You know, before we bring Dale on, you mentioned that, you know, that if not now, when? And you've written a lot, and, you know, one of your great, really wonderful books is The Five Stages of the Soul. And in the Positive Aging Conference, it's coming up. Is there a role? Is there a section that's really going to be dealing with the passages of the soul and the spirituality component of this positive aging?
We will. And when Rabbi Dale Friedman comes on the line, she will have a lot to say about this because she's giving a special workshop on the divine image. And I'm going to say something that's going to strike our listeners as surprising, related to dementia. And, of course, we all are fearful and concerned about dementia, Alzheimer's disease, this kind of thing. But Dale has an interesting and I think really profound perspective on that, which is spiritual. Of course, I did write that book, The Five Stages of the Soul, and I'm going to be doing a dream workshop, which is going to be built around the stages of the soul. And, I will just mention in passing that Charles Dickens' great novel, The Christmas Carol, is really a story about an old man, an elder figure, who was in depression. We would say he was clinically depressed, really, Scrooge. And during the course of his night, through the dreams that he has, he finds a new lease on life. And by the time he's gone through that whole sequence of the dreams, by the next morning, he's a different person. So I do dream workshops with people, and I'm writing a new book on dreams for the second half of life. And that's yet another approach. So there are many, many approaches to this, and we're going to try to showcase some of them at the Positive Aging Conference. I'm not doing a lot at that conference other than that workshop on dreams, though.
Well, it's a good segue because Rabbi Friedman, I think, is on the line. Dale, are you there?
I am here.
Uh-oh. How do you feel? How are you feeling? And your dog is there, too. Cool.
And my dog is here, too. She really likes to be on the radio.
Well, listen, you know, it's America. We're diverse. Uh-oh. We should tell everybody that.
We don't want to be
specious. No, Dale is recovering from the something. So I thank you for calling in. I'll leave the something up to everybody. So,
just the seasonal crud.
The seasonal crud. That's the transition from the winter to spring. So Rick was just mentioning your lunch and learn, I think, session at the Positive Aging Conference next week, dealing with the divine image as it relates to your work in dementia and Alzheimer's. We should mention Rabbi Dale Friedman from growingolder.com, who's
.net.
I always get my nets and my coms mixed up. And Dale has done pioneering work in dealing with spiritual support for families and individuals dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's. And in full disclosure, we serve on a committee, a Jewish advisory committee to the local Alzheimer's Association here in the Delaware Valley. So, Dale, what's this the divine image issue that you're going to be speaking about next week?
Well, honestly, it was provoked. The concept was provoked years ago when a very wonderful rabbi, Herschel Mapp, who served in his later years as a nursing home chaplain, wrote an article called The Fading Image of the Divine about working with people with dementia. And at the time, I too was working with people with dementia. And my work experience allowed me to see amid the cognitive brokenness that which was still whole. You know, I saw people who loved and found joy and wanted to celebrate and had longings and frustrations and all the things that make us human. So when I read Rabbi Matt's article, The Fading Image of God, it didn't seem right to me. And I had been chewing on it for years and years. And then I thought, you know what? I don't think the divine image of God is connected to our cognition. If human beings are created in the divine image, it isn't our minds that are in the divine image. It is our very souls, our very being. Something beyond just cognitive functioning. So I've been spending a long time thinking about what does it mean to have an impairment of cognition? What's the spiritual meaning of that? And how can we look at the human being who lives with dementia? And my sense is that the divine image is always there. And as long as we're alive, we're in the divine image, and maybe the divine image includes brokenness and wholeness. But I don't, of course, want to discount people with dementia as somehow less holy or less human. So I've been struggling to sort of understand the spiritual journey of the person with dementia, of the caregiver of the person with dementia, who's a family member of the paid caregiver of the person with dementia. And I basically feel very strongly that we need to rethink and revalue dementia and stop it from giving us a less than perspective on the person who's living with it.
There's a common perception, you know, dealing with people with dementia and Alzheimer's of this profound loss. And so, what I'd like to ask both of you to just one of the, as I go out in, around in congregations and dealing with this stuff for Jewish sacred aging, this comes up all the time about how do you turn the losses that we encounter as we get older, either the natural losses, I don't hear as well, I can't walk as fast, can't see as well, and the losses such as that Dale is talking about, how do you turn these things into, quote, positive? Is there a positive aspect to any of this concept of loss? Because, you know, Dale, you're talking about the different facets, and Rick has talked about this different stages, this challenge of this dichotomy between positive and negative loss more. How do we begin to handle that in the real world as we get older? Anybody want to chime in?
Great question.
I'm sure we both have something to say. Rick, why don't you go first?
Well, all I would say is that I think that we should be wary of explanations. For example, I'm getting this disease or this condition because I didn't eat right, or because I didn't take enough courses or podcasts or whatever. People, particularly in our society today, have a belief in self-help, and a lot of that is good. But the other side of it is to blame yourself if bad things happen to good people. Again, I keep quoting the rabbis, but I think that it come up with too much of an explanation. I think that religion is ultimately concerned with mystery and with being embraced in the mystery, not trying to explain and have a story that will tell us what's right and what's wrong and why this is happening to me. That's the right question to ask. People can't help ask the question, why me? But at the same time, they don't have to move too quickly to an answer. And before Dale came on, Dale, I was talking about the work that I do on dreams, which I'll share a little bit at the conference. And one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about dream work is because it points us all the time to parts of ourselves that are not rational, that are not cognitive, that are not the ones that we celebrate in, you know, Silicon Valley or whatever. And I think that's important. We need to be open to deeper parts of ourselves. So that's all I would say about, you know, positive and negative.
Dale?
So I totally am sympathetic to everything that Rick has said. What I would add is that aging does include losses. It doesn't only include losses. And I think that somehow in our contemporary dialogue, we have this tendency to flip from one side to the other. Either we're looking at a Nike commercial where a person is bungee jumping at age 90 and we say, you know, aging is without limits, or we say aging is what Bill Thomas calls declinism, that, you know, it's all downhill, you're just going to lose. And life is so much more complicated than that. There are losses that happen even if you're able-bodied. And there are gains that happen even if you experience frailty, even if you experience heartbreak. I would never, ever claim that either side is not true. They're both true. And the more I grow into my 60s, the more I am compelled by the notion of really being able to see gray. You know, maybe there's a reason that our hair turns gray, because I think we need to be able to hold both and. We need to be able to hold paradox and somehow let our hearts be broken and stay open, experience losses and be open to new births in our lives and new beginnings.
Well, you know, Gail, I always say that one of the great inventions of the human race is gray. Because as you get older, you realize, as we all do, that very, very, very few things in life are black and white. There's a lot of gray, and maybe that positive aging is the embrace of the gray, and the surrender to the gray, and a surrender in a positive way, not necessarily a negative way. But both of you are talking about this challenge, and there's a word that's very popular right now called resilience, and in the current issue, it's a very interesting issue of a journal called or a magazine called Psychotherapy Networker, which is a bi-monthly magazine. This whole current issue, which just came out, is on aging. And there's a lead article by Mary Pfeiffer who talks about resilience being learned. So following up on this little conversation, can we learn how to be resilient and dealing with the necessary losses, to channel an old Judith Vorse book, that all of us are going to encounter? Can resilience be learned, or is it just something that you're born with? Rick?
Resilience is a word that has lots of interest today, and there's no question that it's pointing to something very profound, even in our immune system, for example. We have the capacity for resilience and adaptation biologically. We wouldn't exist if we didn't have that capacity. The question of can it be learned is a more profound one. And since I'm on the radio with two rabbis, I would only say that to me, the source of learning about resilience comes in what I will call the great wisdom traditions of humanity, which certainly include the Hebrew Bible, the Psalms, all of the things that we've read that before, we've heard that before. Yes, of course we have, but maybe we haven't heard it deeply enough. And if you really listen deeply to the Psalms of David or the other prophets, you will see lessons about resilience. And I would say that's not true only for the Jewish tradition, but for the other great wisdom traditions of humanity. And for me, that's where I would go, rather than wolfing down some more supplements to increase my biological resilience, which is also a reality. That's just a thought.
That's true. That's true. Dale, your dog is hungry.
I'm so sorry. It must be the mailman.
Oh, that's right. Your dog has a thing
with
uniforms.
In the face of what she experiences as challenges. But what I think human beings are, and I think there's, of course, native character. You know, we all come out, all of us who are parents have seen our kids come out as who they are in some way. But I believe, and I see this with my spiritual direction practice, that we can nurture resilience, and spiritual practices can really be helpful in this. Contacting, as Rick said, great spiritual traditions can as well. So, for example, gratitude practice is enormously helpful in cultivating resilience. Someone that I know through activism has been really, really, really depressed since the 2016 election. And this person took on a gratitude practice and actually shares it, believe it or not, on Facebook every day. And they report that it has been incredibly transformative to notice what's good. So that's one example. I think forgiveness practice, letting go of that which we're carrying around, which is toxic, can be really helpful in allowing us to stay sort of fresh and juicy instead of bitter and dried up. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
I was just going to say, I would point to Psalm 92 in light of what Rick said, the Psalm for the Shabbat day, which ends with the words, Odiruvun b'seva, they will yet bear fruit in old age, ripe and juicy they'll remain. And I think that's pointing to something really important. You know, the Psalms knows too about the possibility of remaining ripe and juicy.
Both of you, you know, you're channeling this idea of wisdom literature cross-culturally. And are you finding as we get older, there is an embrace and a greater openness to really encountering a variety of different cultural wisdom traditions? I know within the Jewish community, there's been in the last decade or so a resurgence of Musar, ethical wisdom, and the study of ethical wisdom and the application of that to daily practice. But as Rick was pointing out, there's so many other rich traditions of wisdom in a variety of different cultures. Are you seeing this resurgence as both of you go around and speak and travel and look and study on the part of boomers?
Rick? I think people are hungry.
Awesome. Go ahead. Go ahead.
My experience is that people are looking. We know that people are more, so to speak, Catholic in their spiritual tastes these days, because people have a broader perspective on where wisdom might come from and less of an allegiance to just one tradition, for good or for ill. So, you see people looking east to what they can learn from mindfulness, meditation, and yoga. You see people looking to their own traditions, and particularly with an interest in the mystical side. So, yes, I think there's a great hunger out there. As Amos says, not a hunger for bread, not a thirst for water, but to hear the word of the Spirit.
Rick, let me ask you a question, too, about something that's happening right now within our society. And I'd like your take and see if it's symbolic of this transition of passing the torch from generation to generation. We just witnessed over the last weekend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people motivated by millennials, by kids, high school kids and college kids, around the gun issue. But I couldn't help but noticing and couldn't help but thinking that this is really a potentially momentous transitional moment from of social justice and social activism from baby boomers to, in essence, our grandchildren's generation. Could you talk a little bit about the nature of how a generation passes the torch in a positive way, in a blessing-oriented way to the next generation?
Well, I was at the march myself on Saturday here in Denver, but I don't want to really talk much about the politics of this. I could, spend the whole show talking about that because I'm very active in Indivisible. But instead, I'll just tell another, since I'm the Shabbos Goy here in this show today, I'm going to keep quoting the rabbis. And in this case, Rabbi Zalman Schachter. Years ago, Reb Zalman, by the way, lived in Boulder. He died a couple of years ago. He spent much of his later years in Boulder, Colorado. Previously, he, of course, lived in Philadelphia and some other places.
Right.
But I'll mention Philadelphia and Boulder because that's a concern at the moment. But I was in a restaurant once with Reb Zalman, and he turned to me and he said, this legacy business is really very simple. We were talking about legacy. What does it mean for generations to leave a legacy for the future? And he said, the real question is, have you done your legacy work? And the question he said is, are you saved? And I said, what do you mean, are you saved? Is this religious? He says, no, I mean it in a computer sense. Are you saved? Have you downloaded your life experience, your legacy, for future generations? And that really is the question that people have to ask themselves as they live their lives. What are we doing to help future generations? It's not a simple question. But I guess in terms of what Dale was saying about the interest in different world religions, nobody exemplified that more than Reb Zalman. He was interested in many different traditions, open to them. At the same time, he never ceased to be a Jewish. He wore the yarmulke. He lived the life of a faithful Jew. And so that it doesn't mean that to be interested in many different traditions doesn't mean you have to depart from your own. What you have to do is to discover the riches that are contained in your own tradition, whatever that tradition is. And I think that that's really the challenge. There's a great story, Martin Buber tells it, of the rabbi of Krakow, where the rabbi has a dream that he's supposed to go to a castle in Warsaw, and there he'll find a great treasure. And so he's so happy about this dream because he's a very poor rabbi, very, very poor. And so he takes all the trouble to travel to Krakow, and finally he gets there and he makes his way to the castle, and a guard stops him. And the rabbi says, I have to get in here because I have to find my treasure. I had a dream. I was told to come here in my dream. And the guard says, funny you should say that. He said, I had a dream last night too. And in my dream, I was supposed to go to the city of Krakow and dig in the backyard of an old rabbi's house and find a treasure. And at that point, the rabbi realized that he had gone on the journey, but he really needed to go home, to return to his own home. And in his own backyard, he would find the treasure. And that's what I meant about the wisdom traditions. By the way, I'm not Jewish, but if I were, I would look in my own wisdom tradition, the Jewish wisdom tradition, and I would say the same for the Buddhist, for the Muslim, for the Christian, and so forth. It's good for us to be curious and open to all different traditions, but at the same time, we all have treasures in our own backyard, and that's what Martin Buber's story is telling us, I think.
We're speaking with Dr. Rick Moody and Rabbi Dale Friedman here on today's edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio and Podcast. And we'll be back to Rick and Dale right after this brief interlude.
Turn your podcasting passion into profits. The book, The Business of Podcasting, describes the business side of podcasting, including how to become a professional podcaster. You'll learn about positioning your clients' expertise through podcasting, too, plus the best business models, how to find clients, and much more. Visit thebusinessofpodcasting.com.
Welcome back to today's edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio, and we are again speaking with Dr. Rick Moody and Rabbi Dale Friedman about initially the upcoming Positive Aging Conference to be held in Philadelphia in the next week or so, and branching off into a whole variety of different things with two of the preeminent leaders in the field of aging and positive aging and spiritual growth here, not only in the United States, but I can really say with great confidence globally. So thank you, guys. And, you know, with the aging of the baby boomers and the change a little bit in media, you know, we now have TV shows that celebrate various aspects of aging where, you know, people are in all kinds of relationships as they get older, transgender, sexual, and all those, some of those barriers seem to be falling on the public media. And yet, I'll ask the both of you, is America still an ageist, youth-oriented society?
Oh, I'm afraid we haven't gotten away from ageism quite so fast. I think all you have to do is go to a drugstore or a greeting card store, and you will see the dread that people feel about growing older. And I'm very happy that some of the images in the media are changing. But until we can, I think, come to embrace something other than the Puritan idea that we value ourselves based on independence and based on what we can produce, that it's going to be very hard for us to come into wholeness and accept ourselves as we age. So I really think we need some other value bases and some other visions to sustain us as we approach the complex realities of aging.
Do you think, Dale, that the economic issue is going to be one of the uniting factors? Because every piece of literature, every piece of economic, we just posted another major article on the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page the other day on this, would seem to indicate that there's a possibility that as it costs more to get older, as it costs more to get sick, that there's going to be a greater need for interdependence, community, and multi-generational involvement, almost going back to some sort of idealized vision of the past. Do you see the possibility of that happening?
I see the reality of that happening. However, let's say that you're a parent can't afford to live by themselves and they can't afford a nursing home, and you take them in your house, and they and you view dependency as something terrible, it's going to be very hard to come to make your peace with it. So I think we're going to see these changes, but we need the revaluing part to happen as well. And we need societal activism, because people should have the resources they need to grow older. And we are going to be in a big pickle as we baby boomers grow older without the social safety net to support us as we become frail.
Now, the
I
believe one of the great social justice issues now facing our generation and the community, the whole what we call the economics of aging, and because the economics of the country are changing, and we're changing, and it's a real social and it's a societal issue that's multi-generational, because if our grandchildren, you know, may be paying for a lot of the stuff that we may be needing in the next 20, 20, 30 years. Rick, in your book, Five Stages of the Soul, you quote someone I think is you're a big fan of, Meister Eckhart, who you quote him saying that the human soul is the, quote, footprint of God, which is a great line. Could you unpack that for us? What did you mean by that?
Where I'd be wise, but I did study Meister Eckhart. I actually did my doctoral dissertation on Meister Eckhart at Columbia 45 years ago. I got a PhD from Columbia, believe it or not, in studying mysticism. I had to learn Middle High German and Latin, and I learned a lot of things from Meister Eckhart, but I didn't necessarily live the truth that Meister Eckhart is talking about. So I do love that quote, there's another quote that I maybe love even better, where Eckhart said, if the only prayer you ever say in your whole life is thank you, that's enough. He's really talking about gratitude. And that seems to be a fundamental issue that we can maybe connect with. We can't say that much about the divine image. It's hard to speak, and the great mystics will all agree with that. But we can understand something about what it means to be grateful. And if we are grateful a little bit for the things that have come our way, then perhaps we can help others. So that seems to me to be the takeaway message from Meister Eckhart. There are many messages that he has, of course, and I absolutely recommend him, along with Martin Buber and Rumi and lots of other sources. But at the end of the day, people have to decide what they're going to do. And one of the things that they can do is to act locally. There's a great environmental slogan, think globally, but act locally. And we could have a whole radio show talking about the problems of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and social justice questions. They're all very real questions. I don't minimize them at all. But at the same time, you can get very discouraged if you just think about that, or you think about what's going on in Washington, D.C. or wherever. Think closer to home. People who are listening to this radio show today are mostly people in the greater Philadelphia area, or southern New Jersey, that part of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. There's wonderful things that you can do right here close to home. And I'll just give one example. The Village Movement, which is national now, and I have no doubt that there are people in the Philadelphia and New Jersey area who can act on this and are acting on it. They connect with neighbors. They connect with people in their immediate milieu, and they learn to help each other. And it started in Beacon Hill in Boston, but people listening to this radio show, for the most part, are not living in Beacon Hill. And the Village Movement is a way of people saying, look, I know that I'm going to be needing some help maybe in a few years, but maybe I can give help right now. Or maybe when I need help, I can also give help in some other way. There's groups that do that for the homebound, for example. And some people who are homebound can pay in telephone reassurance. They can help others. Dale, earlier you were talking about depression, and this is a very serious challenge for people of all ages. And one of the ways of coping with this, just one, but an important one, is to do some of those small things that we can to help other people. And when people are paralyzed, or sometimes they're so depressed that they can't do anything, and then they really need help. But to the extent that you feel bad about things, including political things, find some ways to do small things in your immediate backyard. It's amazing how helpful that can be.
You know, you touched on something that I'd like to throw out to both of you, because we see this in ever-increasing numbers as I travel, and we just put another article on the Facebook page of Jewish Sacred Aging yesterday. Could you both comment on this epidemic of isolation and this concern in many parts of the aging community of people really being isolated? They're alone. They are alone. And the impact of that concept of isolation on their soul, since we're talking about the soul. Dale, can you start us off?
Sure. Well, we don't have to go further than Genesis to read the words Lo tov heyot adam levado. It's not good for a human being to live in isolation. I think whether you have children or a partner, those things don't have to determine whether you're alone. We really need to, as Rick was saying, come up with and use the models that have already been developed, ways of living in community. Everybody says they want to age in place, but really the purpose, the vision should be aging in community. So if you're continuing to live where you lived before, how can you be connected to other people in the community of any age? And if you are going to be living in some sort of a residence of people who are in your cohort, how can there be community there? And how can you continue to be connected to the larger community? I personally feel very passionately about age isolation and how impoverishing that is for all of us. So, on the one hand, I would say that part of the responsibility of being a human being is developing relationships. And for those of us who have the capacity to do it, it's really a good idea to continue to invest in and grow and develop relationships, including relationships across generations. And for people who have less social resources, then that's on the rest of us. We have to do what we can to make sure that there's not somebody in our block who's living out of connection, that there's not somebody who's a member of our congregation who is completely isolated. And we really are called, I think, to extend ourselves, to notice who's around and to forge connection however we can, just like Ian Forster said, only connect.
Yep, that's right.
Go ahead, Rick.
No, that's ahead, Rick. I'm just saying amen, if I can put it that way.
In his recent book, Irving Yalom, a book called Creatures of the Day, which was just recently published by Basic Books, he has this line, which I think is a really, really very powerful line. I like your both reaction to it. He writes, if we have our own why of life, we should get along with any how of life. If we have our own why, we shall get along with any how. What does that mean to you, Rick?
What it means is something which my colleague Richard Leiter calls purpose. And Richard is one of the great thinkers and writers on this subject of the importance of purpose in life. And you can boil it down to something very simple. Why get up in the morning? What's my purpose? Where am I going towards? And I think that's partly what is meant by emphasizing why rather than how. We're pretty good at figuring out how in America. Give us the tools and we'll do the job.
Questions of why are ultimately questions of value. And I think that people confront that question as they grow older, and maybe they're not employed any longer. In my case, I'm retired. They need to sometimes invent or discover, I would say. Discover is a better word than invent. The purpose that keeps them, gets them up in the morning, and it gives them meaning in life. And we need to talk more about that. And I think that that's really one of the things that a clergy can do. Not necessarily to say that they have the answers, but to open up the questions. That's maybe more important than the answers, is the questioning.
Dale.
So I love this. I love that was Irving Yalom who said that.
Yeah, it's in his new book, Creatures of the Day. It's a very, very interesting book, sort of like his reflections on his career of being a therapist. And it's a nice book. And for colleagues who may listen, there's some sermon stuff in there too, because we're always looking. but yeah, it's
Everything
Creatures
is
of the
a
Day.
Sermon.
Yeah, it's Creatures of the Day by
Yalom. You say the author could. Richard, could you say the author and...
Sure. It's Irving Yalom, Y-A-L-O-M. He's sort of like the father of group therapy. And
Right. Very, very prominent man. I know his work, sure.
And you also mentioned
about Mary Pfeiffer earlier in this conversation.
Right.
And I didn't quite catch that. Maybe our other listeners didn't either. That was appearing where?
This is in the brand new March-April edition of a journal called Psychotherapy Networker. And she has the lead article. The cover is called A Gift of Time. And the subtitle of the magazine is Facing the Challenges and New Possibilities of Aging. Psychotherapy Networker is sort of like a more popular magazine dealing with people who are in the therapy world. But this is a collection of articles and reflections by therapists on what does it mean to get older. And it's very interesting. It just came out. I'm probably, if you don't subscribe to it, it may be at Barnes & Noble or a good bookstore that carries a wide variety of magazines.
Very, very helpful, and I'm sure our listeners would want to hear about that too. Thank you.
One of the other issues that comes up all the time, I'm sure, as all of us travel and work with groups and individuals, and I would like you guys to sort of like reflect upon it, is this whole concept of letting go, which we start to do when we're kids. But the concept of letting go, to me, gets more profound in many ways as we get a little older, as we really have to let go, either voluntarily or involuntarily, of a lot of different things, including relationships. And what have the two of you encountered in your careers in working with groups and individuals of the challenges of how people approach letting go of those things, youth, relationships, people, abilities? What have you encountered, and is there a message that you can take out of that, and especially in light of the conference next week on positive aging? What is it that we can take from this very, very natural aspect of having to let go of things?
I want to hear from Dale about this, because I need guidance on this subject myself, and I want an answer. So what's the answer?
Well, there's such a huge range of letting go, you know, from do I hold on to my grandmother's little mementos from when she drove as a volunteer during World War II? To how do I deal with my beloved friends dying? To, you know, how could it be that I'm getting old and my sister's not going to be with me? So I just want to name that letting go is a big, wide river. And what I would say about it is it hurts, to be really brutally frank. It hurts. Some lettings go hurt a lot more than others. Letting go of roles can be really painful or liberating. But the one thing that I would say that I would name as an idolatry about growing older is the notion that things are not supposed to change. I think we make our suffering worse by feeling like, but it's not supposed to be this way.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe
I
just
feel that.
Naming that.
It's supposed to be this way. They treated me.
Yeah, it is supposed to be this way, although, you know, I'll fight to the mat that I will not, you know, gladly accept the losses of the dear ones in my life. And I suppose if I had, you know, significant losses of mobility or function, I would have to really work hard to accept those. So I think, I guess what I would say, Richard, is that grieving is a part of letting go. Favoring is a part of letting go. And accepting is a part of letting go.
You see, the reason that this is continually fascinating to me, because we're all living it, we all are living it, is this understanding, and Rick alluded to this, and you alluded to it too, Dale, is that change is constant. I mean, it as many people have written, this change is the constant in our life, and it changes the constant thing in the universe. The universe continues to evolve and change and grow. All of us continue. We're not the same person, hopefully, that we were 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 40, 50 years ago. But the letting go and the concept of change, as we get older, and I think this is the one of the real existential questions that we have to face, and I'm sure it will be raised next week at the conference, is that the ultimate letting go, of course, is the reality that dawns on each of us, that eventually we'll have to let go of this life. And, you know, to channel another conversation of a couple of minutes ago, the society doesn't accept that in many ways. We're still very youthful oriented. If we just take more pills, exercise another half an hour, never look at a gluten, we'll live forever, you know? But the reality is nobody...
I'm the Boulder. We have gluten-free water. Everything's gluten-free here.
No, you got a lot of other stuff in Colorado too, but...
I know.
It doesn't
make you live forever.
We only have a couple of minutes left in the show, but I really would like to pick both of your brains about how we can then, in a positive way, really approach the ultimate letting go, and that is the letting go of our own life. Rick, you want to start?
We will have a session on that. In fact, more than one at the conference. And I have tried very hard in the positive aging conferences, which I've organized all of them, is to make sure that positive aging doesn't mean just for the joiners, boosters, and believers, the people who are counting their elder hostel trips or whatever. That's good. I used to be the chairman of the board of Elder Hostel, now called Rhodes Scholar. So I'm all in favor of that. But I've tried to make sure that we have sessions on dementia, on end-of-life issues, on caregiving, on all the rest of it. So for people who are potentially interested in coming to that conference, they can just send me a message, and I'll send them the relevant information, hrmoody@yahoo.com. That's hrmoody@yahoo.com. Send me a message, and I'll let you know everything you need to know about the conference, and you can come or not. So that's really what I wanted to say in response, Richard. I will give one other example about holding on and letting go. I held a session at the American Society on Aging some years ago on hoarding and cluttering. And I began it by standing up and saying, I'm a hoarder. And I was referring to all the books in my house, which I'm looking at right now, even as I'm talking. And I wondered, how can I begin to get rid of these books? And came up with a solution. And that is, I found people who I knew could benefit from some of these books. A young man who was majoring in one subject of interest, a woman of a younger generation who she could use some of it. So I started giving away books to specific people for specific purposes. It's a different thing than putting them in the dumpster. Anyway, everybody will find their own way to deal with hoarding, and I don't mean just of possessions, but all the things that we accumulate in life.
Thanks. Rick, Dale, do you want to respond to that letting go and death and mortality thing?
Yeah. excuse me.
I hope you can let go of your cold.
I think it was Keith who said our sweetest songs are those that tell of saddest thoughts. What makes our lives precious is precisely the fact that they're finite. And I think we need to practice that awareness. Think about what's going to be when we're not here. And look at our lives and be aware of what it is that's unfinished so that we can do the work we need to do, whether it's in the world or interpersonal or intrapsychic. So there's a lot to be gained by not evading and avoiding and denying death. And that's a tall order, but I think we all need to work on that.
You know, there is a passage from a prayer book that I'm probably Dale's familiar with, Rick. It's a High Holiday prayer book from the Reform Movement that it's still in use. And there's a passage in the memorial service that talks about, it raises the question, if you were able to live forever, would you, knowing that if you were granted that, there would be no more first loves, there'd be no more children, there would be no more new, there would be no more next generation. And it's a very fascinating paragraph because it raises a lot of these very, very interesting issues that are now coming up, which is why I wanted to ask you about this letting go thing, because there is this concept out there, as Dale was alluding to, that the end, that natural lifespan is necessary for change and growth. There's it just occurred to me, there's a brand new book that I just finished it the other day, Dara Horn's new book, Eternal Life, which posits these two people who live forever. They make a deal, and I'm going to give you the book away, a spoiler alert, but in between the pages and in between the lines and in between the words is this question of, would I want this? Would I want to live like this? In this sort of like never land without death. And it's probably a book club book for a lot of book clubs. And so the holding on and letting go thing, I will for people who are interested in it, is this wonderful also collection of sermons and essays by the late Harold Schulweis, who was a rabbi in Los Angeles. The book is called In God's Mirror. And in that book is this unbelievably beautiful meditation on the Kaddish, the memorial prayer, called Holding On and Letting Go. And there's a beautiful imagery in there. And it really speaks again to exactly this challenge I think you've been talking about, both of you, all hour, of what do we hold on to? What do we let go of? What is precious? What is the spiritual in our life? And as Rick wrote in one of his books, this spiritual journey that we're all on is not for kids. This is a real adult enterprise. So Rick Moody, yep, and Rabbi Dale Friedman from growingolder.net, and Rick, coordinator of the Positive Aging Conference, coming to Philadelphia next week. Thank you very, very much for being with us. I really appreciate your wisdom and continued success and good luck. Dale, feel better. Refuah Shleima to you,
Richard.
Friend. We'll see you all soon.
Very good.
To all of you, I want to thank you again for being part of today's broadcast of the Jewish Sacred Aging Radio and podcast. These shows are archived as podcasts on both Blog Talk Radio and our own website, jewishsacredaging.com. Again, we invite your comments and suggestions to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. The shows are produced at the studios Lubetkin Global Media here in Cherry Hill, and thank you to our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Thank you for listening. We look forward to greeting you again on the next edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio and podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you. Shalom to all of you. Since it's coming up, have a joyous Passover and Easter season, and happy baseball season.